You are listening to the Midcurrent Church Podcast. Today's message is week two of our series, Summer Break, Breaking Away from Bad Theology. For more information and to visit us online, check out midcurrentchurch.org and find us on Facebook and Instagram. And now, here is Pastor Sten Carlson with today's message.
I think some of my most favorite arguments that I have with my kids, they're 9, 7, and 4, that my most favorite arguments or just conversations, discussion with them are the ones when they are convinced that they are right about something and that I am wrong simply because all of their like friends at recess told them so, or because they heard their older cousins say something, right? Some other 7-year-old sounded pretty convincing, pretty adamant about what, you know, whatever we were discussing. And so certainly he or she, their little 7-year-old group of buddies, certainly he or she must be pretty spot on, must have a better handle of whatever we're discussing than dear old dad. It kind of sounds like the playground version of something interesting that I learned about this week, and I don't know if you've ever heard of this either, but this whole scenario with my kids and what they hear, it sounds kind of like the playground version of something called the illusory effect. Anyone heard of it? The illusory effect. The illusory effect is simply this. It's the tendency to believe false information to be correct after repeated exposure, right? That the more that you hear it, more the kids on the playground tell you it's true, right? The more you hear it, the more you start to think like, yeah, I guess that must just be how this goes. Now, truthfully, this illusory effect, it's not really like a kid thing. It's not really like a playground thing. I think it's really more of kind of an adult thing that happens in the real everyday world that we live in. Truthfully, this illusory effect that happens with a lot of the information that this just passed around in community day, sometimes it happens with certain things we hear on the news or around the water cooler. It happens in mainstream culture today. And the truth is, this illusory effect, right? It happens in Christian culture too. Happens in Christian culture with well-meaning Jesus followers. We hear something, we hear some idea, some thought, something that sounds true. We hear it enough times in enough places from enough people, and we start to believe, well, it must be true. That seems like this is how this whole thing, whatever thing it is, it seems like this is just how it works. It's the illusory effect. And there's a particular phrase, there's a particular kind of idea that gets thrown around a lot in the world today. I'd almost be willing to bet that you hear it in a lot of places from a lot of people. There's a phrase that gets thrown around a lot today, both in Christian and in non-Christian circles. There's a phrase, an idea that gets thrown around that I think fits this category. I think it fits this illusory effect category of something that is not necessarily true, but it's said so much that I think after a while people start to just assume or believe that it must be true. And it's a phrase, honestly, that could have, and I think in a lot of ways it probably already has had or is having a negative impact on A, how people view God in the world, and B, as having a negative impact on the relationship that we may have with Him. Okay, you wondering what phrase it is that I'm referring to? Okay, you ready for this? Here's the phrase. Everything happens for a reason. Everything happens for a reason. I'll be honest with you, I just had someone share that with me in a recent conversation about some things that they were dealing with in life. Everything happens for a reason. Have you heard this before? Okay, hands are going up. Now that I've just completely ruined the phrase, is anyone willing to admit that they have ever uttered the phrase before? You don't have to raise your hand for that one, okay? This phrase, this idea gets thrown around all over the place today. And so today, I wanted to take some time to just examine a little closer this popular way of thinking. And I wanted to do it in the third week in our series, Summer Break. Now, I'm not urging you in this series, I'm not urging you to take a break from responsibility or having to mow the lawn this summer or do chores around the house. I'm not inviting you to take a break from work, and please don't take a break from church this summer. Instead, my goal with this series, Summer Break, is to help all of us break away from bad theology. Essentially, if you're not sure, which is understandable, theology is simply the study of, and it's the understanding of the nature of God and of God's word. Whether you realize it or not, I'm kind of doing theology up here every Sunday morning, helping you to gain a clearer understanding of God, right? Because our understanding of God and our understanding of Scripture, it then gives shape to our understanding of various aspects of Christian life and faith that we all navigate every day, right? That's all theology. Quite literally, it means thinking about God. And what we think to be true of God and what we think to be true of his nature and his character ultimately has a way of influencing how we respond to God. Ultimately, it has a way of influencing and affecting how open we are to him, how interested we are in what he has to say about the lives that we live. And that's why it's important that we get this kind of stuff right. Because what's unfortunate, and this happens, what's unfortunate is when certain thinking about God, certain ideas about God come along, whether it was intentional that this idea came along or whether it was unintentional. But what's unfortunate is when certain ideas, certain thinking about God comes along that gives us the wrong idea about God, and we start to respond to God and interact with God accordingly, right? And when certain ideas come along that sound right, maybe it's the illusory effect, I don't know, but when certain ideas or certain ways of thinking come along that sound right, that they kind of sound, churchy, they kind of sound religiously, but are actually not all that accurate when it comes to God and his character and his will for us, we'd say it's bad theology. It sounds right, kind of like, it might work, but it sounds good, but it's actually just not great theology. And what makes it hard, last thing I'll say just about this whole idea. What makes it hard is that sometimes bad theology, we've been saying this throughout the whole series, it comes from well-intentioned people and it comes from well-intentioned places. Bad theology often stems from something that like I said, it kind of seems legit, like, checks out. But if we actually dug a little further, we'd realize it was just off enough somewhere in the beginning, maybe, which can then, eventually lead us into just the complete wrong direction in general when it comes to God and when it comes to his role in the world, in our lives. And I don't want anyone looking or heading in the wrong direction when it comes to God and his role in our lives and in the world. And so this series is designed to help us break away from bad theology before it breaks us, and before it breaks our relationship with God. And I hate to be the bearer of bad news today, but this idea that everything happens for a reason is just not great theology when it comes to our life and when it comes to our faith and when it comes to our daily following Jesus. I know a lot of Jesus followers say it and believe it and post it on their Facebook pages with, really pretty, pictures behind it, right? But it really is just a pretty unhelpful way to think theologically about events in life and in the world. And ultimately, that's my goal as your pastor, to help you think theologically about all the things in your world. Not my job is not to help you think, in self-helpy ways or in self-affirmation-y ways. My goal as your pastor is to help you think about all the things in your life in a theological way, to help you think theologically, to take more of your everyday life and run it up against what is true of God and true of his nature and true of his heart and true of his will for your life. And if we are to take this idea that everything happens for a reason and examine it closely and run it up against what is true of God and what is true of his nature, his heart, I think that we would see that it really just doesn't fly, and that it might be doing more harm than good. Now, I'm not exactly sure how many categories there are. I'm sure there could be more, but in my opinion, there are three categories. In my opinion, the people most often use this phrase, everything happens for a reason, in response to three different things: misfortune, failure, and tragedy. Sure, there's more, but in my opinion, it's in response to these three things that we most often are tempted to believe this idea that everything happens for a reason. When it comes to misfortune, when it comes to failure and tragedy, I think people so badly want to believe that it all happened for a reason. And so I want to talk about all three of those scenarios today. And I'll start with misfortune. You could even say just this kind of like major inconvenience, right? When we break our arm or stub our toe or stumble into some really bad luck or some really just unfortunate circumstances. Well-meaning Jesus followers are often really quick to assume that there must have been a good reason for it, that God must have been trying to get our attention or to teach us a lesson, okay? Which is not always the case. And here's, I'll admit, here's where this gets tricky, because I think, at least with this idea of misfortune, kind of the bad luck thing here, I think sometimes that this might be true. And that's often where bad theology begins, with something that's true here, but then we grabbed a hold of and made true everywhere, right? So we gotta be more thoughtful than that. But I will admit, of the three, okay, this is the one area where it's a little more great. Because if we look at both the Old and New Testament, that's what we consult if we want to be people who are thinking theologically. When you look at the Old and New Testament, you'd see that sometimes God does use drastic measures, right? God does use drastic circumstances to get the attention of his people. Take Jonah's story is told in the Old Testament. Take Jonah, for example. God told Jonah, he had a special assignment for him. He told Jonah to go to the city of Nineveh and to tell the people to turn from their sin and to turn from God. And Jonah says, not gonna do it. Okay, he's like, uh-uh. He runs in the other direction. He hops aboard a ship that's sailing in the direction, exact opposite direction of Nineveh, far from Nineveh. And here's how God responds. Then the Lord sent a great wind on the sea, and such a violent storm arose that it threatened to break the ship apart. Jonah's trying to take off, and God says, uh-uh. He gets his attention. God gets Jonah's attention with some like divine misfortune. Same thing happened to Paul, the apostle formerly known as Saul. Okay, Saul persecuted Jesus' followers. One day, Saul was on his way to take a bunch more Christians out, and God sent on the road that he was traveling on, God sent a bright flashing light that knocked Saul to the ground. And look at what happened next. It says this, that Saul got up from the ground, but when he opened his eyes, he could see nothing. For 3 days, he was blind. Okay? So temporary misfortune here, and for Jonah too, it was the event that God used to get their attention. Temporary kind of misfortune here, what was the event that God used to change Saul's heart, to take a man who murdered Jesus' followers and turn him into one of the most influential leaders of the whole Jesus movement, right? So occasionally for God, we see that desperate times call for desperate measures. Okay? And that's what makes this idea, I think, that's what makes this idea that everything happens for a reason. It makes it so attractive. That's what makes this idea so appealing. We think, yeah, you know, look at what God is doing behind the scenes of some of the bad stuff that happens in the world. Okay? But to say that what God did one time is who God is all the time, that's just kind of where bad theology has the potential to blossom. Okay, and I think it's that kind of scenario that might lead some of us to embrace this idea in places where it could be a little more harmful. I think it's that very scenario that leads some of us to embrace this idea when it comes to some other parts of our life, including the second scenario that I mentioned, which is failure. Some of the mistakes that we made or the missteps that we took or some of the brokenness that we're experiencing in our life. Sometimes when people experience a broken relationship or a busted business venture or some other kind of costly miscalculation, maybe at home or at work or someone else, they kind of say, and I hear this from people who say, you know, they're kind of like, well, I know it's not great, but everything happens for a reason, right? Yeah, I know that's not the best, but you know, I'm thinking everything happens for a reason, doesn't it? It feels better. I get it. It feels better to believe that God was maybe somehow somewhere involved in it, or that he was maybe even kind of okay with it. He was kind of, you know, blessing it from secretly, you know, behind the scenes somewhere. It's easier to do that rather than to look in the mirror, right? To examine ourselves and to take responsibility for anything that we might have done to contribute to what it is we're experiencing. Now, please, 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 please don't misunderstand me. I'm not trying to make anyone feel bad about any mistakes that you make. This is all of us. I mean, I'm the chief mistake maker among us, right? I'm not trying to make anyone feel bad. I just don't want anyone to hold too tightly to bad theology that might be sabotaging your heart. And I'm just not sure that our failure in big ways or in little ways, I'm not sure that our failure always happens for a reason. If anything, the hard truth is that sometimes we're the reason, right? It's me, hi, I'm the problem, it's me, right? Sometimes the moral failure or the professional failure or the relational failure, sometimes it's that we messed up, we fell short, and we're just now experiencing the consequences of it. Now, here's the great news about that, right? I told you, I'm not trying to make anyone feel bad. I just don't want us to grab a hold of bad theology. Here's the great news about that. For our failure. Our failure is never final in God's eyes. That's the good news. But it's not because that, you know, it's not because God had a good reason for it all along. It's because Jesus paid for it on the cross a long time ago. So we can celebrate that. We can celebrate that and be glad for that, but let's not let that be an excuse for why we don't examine our own hearts and our own motives and our own mistakes when things don't go as they planned. Let's not let that be the reason that we don't pray a different prayer that says, hey, God, search me, search my heart, examine me, test me, God, see if there's anything offensive in me. Okay, that's the second scenario that I think we're often most tempted to believe this idea that everything happens for a reason. Here's the third scenario that often leads us to this line of thinking. It's tragedy. And I don't want to talk about tragedy, too casually. I don't want to start talking about, you know, tragedy too flippantly, like, it's not a big deal. I don't want to be trite about this. Because tragedy, I mean, that's hard stuff. But here's the deal. We are bad. I don't know, if this is just humankind in general, or if it's Americans or American Christians, I don't know. We are bad at dealing with what is hard and with what is sad in our lives. We don't like feeling sad, right? We don't like seeing other, you know, people feel sad. It makes us uncomfortable, and we don't like feeling uncomfortable. So what do we do? What do we say to people, you know, who have just experienced tragedy? We try to, and I appreciate the good intentions here. That's the thing. Sometimes bad theology, it comes from really well-meaning people and places. But what do we do when people just experience tragedy? We try to make them feel better with really good intentions and a pure heart. We try to make them feel better by telling them that everything happens for a reason, right? We love God and we believe that he is good. And so we try to tie a bow onto the bad things that happen. And we ask other people to believe that they happen for a reason. And I know that people mean well when they say this, but if you really think about it, it's just not true. It's just not helpful. And here's the kicker, right? Here's what really gets my attention, right? This paints a pretty ugly, a pretty unattractive picture of God, right? That God had a reason for some of the tragedy that we experience in the world. I appreciate people trying to comfort or encourage friends and family or loved ones or themselves that are in hard places. But if I'm being really honest with you, I'm not really sure that I could get down with a God who had a good reason why an innocent child should die in a car accident or because of some other senseless act of evil. I'm just being honest. I'm not totally sure that I'm all that down with a God who had a reason for that. The tragic truth is that sometimes, and again, I'm not trying to be flippant or casual about this stuff, the tragic truth is that sometimes bad things happen because we live in a broken world that was fractured well before any of us drew our first breath on this earth. It's a broken, fractured world. And so sometimes, this is just from my perspective, sometimes I think it does more harm than good for us to suggest or for us to assume that God had a good reason for a really bad thing to happen. So then, what does all this mean? Now that I've got everybody feeling good this morning, what do we do with all this? Where do we take it from here? Where do you take it from here? If you want to think, remember, this is my goal. If you want to think theologically, I want to help you to think theologically about your life and the things that happen in your world. So where do you take this? What do you do with this if you want to think theologically about some of the chaos, about some of the misfortune and the failure and the tragedy you experience in your world? What do you do? Where do you go? Where do you take this? If that's you wanting to know how do I think theologically about this kind of stuff, what I would love to do is turn and pivot and show you and read for you something that Paul, right? He's that apostle that I referenced earlier, that influential leader. I'd love to show you something that Paul wrote to a group of Christians. I'm sure very much like you and I. He wrote a letter to a bunch of Christians in the city of Rome some 2,000 years ago. And I want you to listen to what he writes to them. I don't know if maybe they were having similar conversations to the one that I'm introducing today. I'm not sure, but listen to what Paul says in Romans 8, chapter 28. He says this, and we know, right? If you're a church-going kind of person or a Bible-reading kind of person, maybe you've read this verse before. Paul writes, and we know that in all things, God works for the good of those who love him and who have been called according to his purpose. In all things, God works for the good of those who love him. What's interesting when you're reading this, what's interesting is if you read the little footnotes in the Bible, which sometimes I follow those little rabbit trails, right? If you read the footnotes in the NIV version of the Bible, you'll see a little note that informs you that some of the transcripts of this letter, because that's how we got these things. They found actual hard copy letters, transcripts of these things that were written to people. The little note tells you that some of the transcripts that were found read a little bit differently. There's a few others kind of suggested translations for how this would be, translated for us. And that little note says, actually some places say this, that in all things, some translations say, in all things, God works together with those who love him to bring about what is good. Okay? In all things, God works together, arm in arm. He works together with those that love him to bring about what is good. Okay, now there's two important pieces that I think we can't overlook. The first is the promise that this is for those who love God, that this is the truth. This is what we can hold on to. That's not insignificant, right? Because if you truly love God, then you'll care about what he cares about and your priorities will be his priorities. And when that is the case, when your priorities really are God's priorities, when your will really is his will for you, when that's the case, then in all things, here's the second piece, God can bring about what is good. Okay? Now, it's not saying that there will be, or it's not saying that there is good in all things. Everything happens for a reason because there is good in all of it. It's not saying that there was good in all things. It was saying that in all things, when all things happen in your life, good, bad, or ugly, God can bring about, in response to it, God can bring about what is going to be good for you in spite of it. So Midcurrent, here's what I want you to know today. God doesn't cause all things for good, but he can use all things for good. God didn't cause it. We can't say, well, everything happens for a reason. God doesn't cause all things for good, but he can use all things for good. And when that is the case, here is the goal for you and I. Here's my prayer for you, that in the midst of life's ups and downs, here's the deal. Here's the goal, right? That we wouldn't look for the good in all things, but that we would create the good from all things. That we wouldn't go looking for meaning or looking for purpose and everything, because it might not necessarily be there. So that's not the goal in life's up and down. The goal is not to look for the good in all things, but it's to create the good. It's to create purpose. It's to create meaning from all things, out of all things, in response to all things that come our way. The goal is not to search for purpose, because sometimes it's not there. And here's what happens. The more you're convinced that it's there and you're not finding it, the more you're gonna get discouraged. Something's wrong with me. This thing ain't working. This whole God thing that somebody told me, it's not working. The more you search for something that's not there, you'll get discouraged. The more you'll give people the wrong idea about God, but by telling them to search for something that is not necessarily there in the first place as well. As I said, sometimes bad stuff happens, and yet when it happens for those of us who love God, meaning his priorities are ours, his will is our will, right? What he wants for us is what we want for us then too. When that's the case, then in all things we can work together with God, and we can choose to create good from it. There wasn't a reason that God secretly wanted the misfortune or the failure or the tragedy to happen, but when it strikes, right? When it happens in our lives, we can choose to pursue what is good in response to it. And it really truly is a choice for you and me. When it happens, when tragedy hits, when misfortune strikes, right? When failure is what we're experiencing, we can be defensive about it, we can be in denial about it, we can be bitter about it, or we can be better. We can get better and be better in spite of it. With God's help. God didn't necessarily cause it, but he can use it. He can use it for good. Whenever I think about these kind of things, I often think about some family friends of ours that we met when my wife Erica and I were doing ministry in Colorado. I think about this family who lost their teenage daughter to meningitis, and in the years after this tragedy, they decided that they wanted to try to do everything that they could to prevent another family from having to experience what it is that they experienced. And so what they did is they created Sierra's Race. Her name was Sierra. So they created Sierra's Race Against Meningitis. And it was an annual 5K race that quite honestly has grown into a wildly popular road race in northern Colorado. I mean, it first kind of started with family and friends who, kind of were just right here, but all of a sudden it's like a race that runners in northern Colorado come to run, Sierra's Race Against Meningitis. And all of the profits from the race go to research and to treatment and to the prevention of childhood meningitis taking anyone else's life. And it's amazing to learn the stories, because they share all the stories when you attend the race. It's amazing to learn about all the good they have done and all the lives that they have saved because of it. It's amazing. It's inspiring. I think that's why the race is growing and like crazy. But we just got to be careful, right? All the good that they have done is not the secret meaning behind the premature death of their daughter. It's not the reason that it happened. I just don't think that that's how God works, that one innocent girl had to go so that others could be saved. I don't think that's how this thing works, but they have, this family has chosen to not search for the purpose. God, there has to be, find the, what are you doing? No, but they chose instead to create purpose, to create meaning out of what it is that happened to them. There wasn't a reason that it happened, but they said, you know what? It has happened, and we're gonna create purpose. We're gonna create meaning from it in response to it. And that is, friends, I think that's our goal, especially for Jesus followers, especially for people who love God and who have been called according to his purposes. So Mid-Current Church, I wanna just ask you today, I'm not exactly sure, I don't know all your stories, but I just wanna ask you, where is there at all? Where is there chaos in your world right now? Where is there misfortune, or where is there failure, or where is there tragedy, right? It feels a little trite to say that God is in control of all, but all it's suggesting is that when our hearts are aligned, and we're pursuing God's priorities and we want what he wants for us, then he is still able to bring about what is good, even in what was bad. And because of that we can trust our lives to him. We can place ourselves confidently in his hands. And so if you're experiencing tragedy or failure or misfortune, let me just encourage you, right, to consider not what the purpose behind all of it was, but let me encourage you in terms of creating purpose. Let me encourage you toward the purpose that you could cultivate in response to it, whatever it is, right? Maybe your response to tragedy is similar to the family that I mentioned. Maybe it's giving back and it's supporting those and advocating for those who are experiencing what you just experienced. Maybe your response to failure, maybe it's repentance, which is just turning around. Maybe it's turning from sin and turning to God once again, or for the first time. Maybe your response to some of the misfortune in your life is to heighten the rest of your senses so that all of God's blessings and all the other parts of your life might help you to develop a true heart of gratitude, right? Good can still come from it, with a God who's standing by to bring about what is good. I don't know what it is for you, but I'm hoping that us here at Mid-Current Church, that we wouldn't just settle for believing that everything happens for a reason, but rather we would take everything that does happen and create something, or pursue something, or cultivate something, or develop something, or do something, or be something better in response. Right? For in all things, God is standing by, ready to work together with you and me to bring about what is good and what is right and what is true. Let me pray. God, thanks so much for this chance to run more of what we hear and say and think and do up against what we know to be true about you, God. And here's the reality, God. I'm sure in a room like this, there are plenty of people who are experiencing tragedy or pain or mistakes and missteps and failures and misfortunes, God. And I don't bring it all up to be trite or to be casual, God, because I know a lot of this stuff is hard. I'm just praying that you would help us, God. As a church, God, help us to be people who choose to do good and to be good and to create the good out of what it is that happens to us, God. When chaos strikes, God, may it really be our goal that we don't search for the purpose in it, God, but more than anything else, we just search for you. At all times, God, we search for you. We're not searching for purpose that might not exist behind something bad that happened, God, but we search for you. We search for you, God, and the good that you might be ready to do in our life in response to it, God. So that's our prayer, God. Help us, teach us to respond to the things that happen in this world in a whole new way. God, teach us to look for you in all things. And we pray this in the name of your Son, Jesus. Amen.
Thank you for listening to this week's message from Mid-Current Church. For more information and to visit us online, check out midcurrentchurch.org and follow us on Facebook and Instagram. Midcurrent Church is located at 200 First Street in downtown Hudson, Wisconsin. Be sure to join us on Sunday mornings, both online and in person, at 9 and 10:30 a.m.